are you?
I'm no one.
I was raised to do one thing. But I've got nothing to fight for.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
There are stories about what happened.
It's true. All of it.
The dark side. A Jedi.
It's calling to you. Just let it in.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Storytime with Tofu. I'm your host, Stephen Toyofuku. And thanks again. I apologize. I know, like me, you probably have heard and seen that trailer many times, but I just could not resist, because if you haven't seen this movie yet, that should make you want to go see it right now. Right now. I saw it on Friday. It was amazing. I don't want to talk too much about this right now because I want to make sure everyone has seen it, but go see The Force Awakens. You will not be disappointed. It's literally everything you could have ever hoped for after this hiatus of Star Wars, on the big screen. So that's my pitch. My real pitch was just playing that trailer again, because that's really all you need. Anyway, moving on. A lot of big things happened in the past 2 weeks on television. This past week, Friday, the Nick season finale, and then the previous week, Sunday, Monday, was the Leftovers season finale, as well as the Fargo season finale. Now, I'm not going to talk about all of those things in great detail. I'm mostly going to use this podcast as a short list of things. Hey, hopefully you got some spare time this break. Hopefully you got a time to pick up a new show. So we're mostly going to be quickly wrapping up those three finales, talking about those shows' potential futures, and then hopefully I'll just be able to hop in and just ramble about, like, a ton of different shows you could or should be watching right now. Through the joy of the seasons on Hulu. Anyway, okay, so let's start with The Leftovers. Now, I've kind of been avoiding reading a lot of other critical response to this and kind of not looking at a ton of lists, because everyone has their own personal lists of, top 25 shows of the season, but I was pretty shocked that this show is consistently scoring in the top five shows for a lot of websites, especially like Vulture. And I think it was Matt Zollerhertzer, I believe, who put three of the episodes from the season of The Leftovers on his top 10 best episodes of television's list as well. So, I like to think I'm not alone in thinking they're doing something really amazing, but let's just dive right into it. Okay, so Leftovers season finale could not have been more the opposite of the previous season's finale, as well as it also, I suppose, represents an entire different personality of this series that hopefully it's gonna take up with into the next season as well. And without going into too many details, basically, Kevin's journey is somewhat completed. He and we actually get a sense of closure at the end of this episode. No, it's funny. I just spoke to my good friend Bridget last night about this, and she actually thought it was terribly cheesy and a little disappointing. But you know, I disagreed with her, and I still do, because what made that scene really special, and what made this this entire season really special, is that it's perfectly created a universe, yet it's made the characters in it a lot more human is not the right word, but that you just care about them. Like, I did not really care. Well, okay, that's not true. A lot of the critical complaint, and you know, at times I felt this as well, is you don't really care about what these characters are doing in this first season. You know, and I've said that in previous podcasts, and you know, I suppose that it's helped focus the series a bit more around Kevin, because I feel like he wasn't utilized. Justin Theroux was not utilized to his full potential in the first season. And you know, I'm not going to speculate anymore. I've heard that the first season burns, like, exhausts a ton of The Leftovers' actual book series, and that the second season, you know, took a lot of liberties in creating their own, you know, mythos and narrative. But the main issue with Justin Theroux, Kevin Garvey's character in the first season, is that he's kind of in denial about what's happening to him, I suppose. And I don't know if it's he's confused about it, but I mean, it's clear to us, the audience, the entire time that something's up, but like, there's no concrete direction we're pointed into what's exactly going on, and we're left kind of, you know, again, I love wildly speculating. This is why we watch television, but you're left kind of speculating without real clues, and it's kind of like if you found a sterile crime scene, but there was a body. There was a body, but the entire crime scene was sterile and left with like weird, like post-it note clues of strange activity. I'm not sure. That was a strange explanation of that. But anyway, season two is Kevin facing his problems, facing his issues, and although he's fighting it, he's not in denial about it, and which allows us to actually understand what kind of is going on in his life. Of course, you're always going to question the why and the how, but you know, the fact of the matter is that you can put yourself in his shoes, like, very easily. You know, I would argue trying to get into the shoes of certain characters in season one is arguably like you need a really giant shoehorn, I suppose, or like a really special one, because they're so dense and so far removed from the world we feel like we live in, which again, this is just observation. I apologize if I'm sounding critical. They were very dense characters. It was a very dense world, not necessarily to observe, but to find yourself in and look outwards from. Season two didn't have any of these problems. You know, what I like to put of it, say, is, you know, we're a traveler looking for clues along the very interesting ride of season two of The Leftovers. And again, I guess I'm not sure if I want to mostly talk about this finale, if I mostly want to talk about the entire season. But let's leave it at this, mostly because I don't want to keep you long on this holiday podcast. Season two is arguably the crazy, in the same way that True Detective season two is like one of the hardest falls I've seen from an HBO series. Probably the reboot of The Leftovers is arguably the best resurrection, which is hilarious because that is an actual theme of the season. Kevin Garvey, the man who can't die. But anyway, go watch the show. Tell me what you think about it. I still don't think it's for everybody. It's a lot better. It's a lot better, the series. It makes me really excited. I have a lot of friends that are much more on board this season with the show and have actually made a point to like marathon through the first season because they started seeing that this one was really good. So check it out. They're doing things on television that are really special, and that's kind of awesome, and you know, it's indicative of the time we live in. So that's my pitch for The Leftovers. Definitely getting a season 3. I actually am not sure if that's going to drop in 2016. It might be The Leftovers, like Fargo, is doing a 2017 release, but stay tuned. So moving on to Fargo. Oh no, Holly, thank you so much. This, in my opinion, of the three shows that this podcast focuses on, is the easiest to watch. This season is essentially a 70s crime drama, which is pretty awesome, especially because it's done, you know, with like a Coen Brothers lens. So you get these very interesting, you know, you keep getting these awesome double pane shots. You have a very, very vibrant and well acted, and a well casted cast of actors for this. Kirsten Dunst is now probably one of my favorite actors out there. Peggy just won the final two episodes of, well, I suppose maybe Peggy didn't win it, but Kirsten Dunst's portrayal of Peggy made Kirsten Dunst win, I think, the final two episodes of Fargo. Jesse Plemons and Patrick Wilson, also very fantastic. I'm shocked Ted Danson is... I'm saying this, but yeah, Ted Danson did a really great job, and I'm really glad he didn't die. And I apologize, the actor who plays Mike Milligan, his name is escaping me, but just all wonderful. And what I'm going to focus about on Fargo, other than directly reviewing the final two episodes, is, you know, again, greater, bigger picture here. So we already know that Fargo has been announced for a third season. It's been picked up, and big news, guys, it's not gonna come out till 2017. So remember how, I believe, 2014, True Detective was a January series. And, you know, if you recall, because they were True Detective, the nightmare that is True Detective season 2 was a summer release series. And it arguably maybe wouldn't have been a terrible train wreck if they had more time in production. And I'm honestly not... there's no guarantee of that. And I'm not 100% sure why HBO was so intent on, you know, pushing the production of this through. Mostly because it was a great series and it got, got a lot of great attention for the network. But, I mean, it's not like their Game of Thrones or True Blood, you know. And, I mean, in the sense that, because it's an anthology series, you know, part of the main reason people get upset that they have to wait longer for a series to come out is because, you know, they really want to know what's going to happen to those characters directly. Like, because it's going to immediately pick off after the last season and you're left, you know, with this great state of wanting. Fargo and True Detective as well, because they're both anthologies, we didn't necessarily get a pretty pink bow at the end of either of those series, and especially because in Fargo we're going to reuse and revisit some of these characters in different periods in time in the same location. There is that string thread, but there's no... the series are over after the episodes are done. You know, 10 episodes of Fargo, the story is told. 8 episodes of True Detective, the story was told. And to in my opinion, insist, you know, that, oh, we need this by next spring at the same time, and you have to do the same thing again. I 100% agree that that's how a show is going to burn out really, really quickly. We saw that. It happened to True Detective. Maybe if Nick Pizzolatto and HBO didn't really, really try and rush into, we need to cast this right now, we need to write this right now, we need to start producing this right now because it needs to come out next year. Maybe if they said, hey, we're going to do a True Detective season 2 fall release, I don't think people would have been that upset. I think, maybe like the average person who, you know, is really impatient and doesn't necessarily understand how the industry works would be like, oh, I don't have to wait for TV. Sure, but I'm pretty sure all the critics would completely understand. In the same way that everyone has been very positive when Fargo just announced that they're going to drop season 3 in 2017. So, again, this is just a very new way of making TV. Well, I'm too young to make that statement. Compared to the networks and compared to what we are accustomed to, even on the premium channels, this is a new refreshing way to receive television. We'll leave it at that. So Fargo, the final. What are the final thoughts on Fargo? I want to leave you with, and it's mostly to just kind of get you excited for the next season. You know what? We're going to table that. I'll probably add this a little later at the end of the episode. But basically, if you had to pick one of the three shows I talk about on this show, The Leftovers, The Nick, and Fargo, you should probably watch this series. It's available on FX now. I believe probably in January, season 2 will be up on Hulu. But if you haven't seen season 1 yet, I've already convinced 10 people to do this. Watch season 1, Fargo season 1 with Martin Freeman. On Hulu. It's available, Hulu Plus. It's available. So that's my pitch. Check it out. You won't regret it. Anyway, moving through these quickly. Don't want to keep you too long. We're going to talk about the Nick and how we're all going to miss Clive Owen. No. Okay. Dr. John Thackeray was definitely nearing the end of his rope, but I had not realized that, Clive Owen only signed a 2-year contract. And I'm okay with that. It makes sense for an actor, maybe not an actor of his caliber isn't the right word, but, you know, a traditional film actor, to not perhaps want to be tied to a show forever, especially one that's probably as demanding as The Nick in terms of both his talent as an actor as well as scheduling. Because I just picture doing anything period is a nightmare of costumes and, like, fitting, like, a terrible amount of fittings and just, like, long shoots. But anyway, less me feeling sorry for Clive Owen's life. The big thing I want to talk about this series is, yes, Dr. John Thackeray has left the building. He is no longer going to be a part of The Nick. Let's talk about where that leaves us. Okay, great. As I've said before, this season of The Nick, in my opinion, has done a great job of expanding on its side characters. And reflecting on that thought now, it's likely because the focal point of the series, Dr. John Thackeray, aka Clive Owen, was destined to die in writing. I didn't realize there was a Nick podcast done by, I believe, the producer, Jack Amiel. So I'm going to start listening to that, and maybe if I find some new information about it, I'll release it in a later episode that's not focused on The Nick, just as a little snippet. But I believe we were introduced to Henry Robertson, Neely's brother. Cornelia's brother. He calls her Neely. And I didn't think he was going to be that central of a character, honestly, at the beginning of the series. But as I think around episode 4, I realized, okay, he's gonna be a big part of this. And I guess this makes me kind of think of The Bridge almost. Yeah, The Bridge more so than The Wire, because The Wire is just its own weird category of epicness. The Bridge, not the Danish series, which I've only seen 2 episodes of, the former FX remake, which was a summer series that got, I believe it was canceled in 2014 after the season 2. The creator of that was a bit criticized, or he was self-criticized himself, saying he focuses too much on his side characters. But honestly, that was one of my favorite aspects of The Bridge, and this has been one of my favorite aspects of The Nick that honestly has made it a lot better than the first season. The first season, I believe, was very heavily carried by Steven Soderbergh's cinematography or direction, as well as Clive Owen's acting. The writing was superb. It was very well done. There's no criticism of there are no negative points of the writing of that first season. However, what was done with the second season is he just has bolstered that superb script with just a lot more progressive ideas. I think a lot more bold choices and a lot more depth to, again, his side characters like Cornelia, like Algernon Edwards, like Dr. Barrow, and especially with Miss Eve Houston, famed daughter of Bono, playing wonderful Lucy Elkins. So where this leaves us now that Clive Owen is dead on the Nick, I believe, is they're gonna start centering. They're either gonna somehow magically keep this Wiring-esque format of just telling tons of different stories all connected to the same place in the same world, or what I really hope they do is they make the focal point of this series Dr. Algernon Edwards. He just to me represents not everyone we want to be. He represents the good guy in even his flaws. And by that I mean he has a temper. And what's great about that is such a reflection of what we're seeing today. You hear it was like, oh, like, well, if the African black community wants to be respected, why do they keep acting like this? Why don't they do things civilly and blah blah blah? And you know, direct in an episode of The Nick, Edwards draws his fist and gets ready to fight like a gentleman. And of course, Dr. Gallinger, the eugenics master himself, drops the line. It's like, why are you proving our thoughts about your species accurate? And he just says it is because there is literally nothing else you have left me to do, which is exactly true. And I was guilty of at times thinking this when I was a lot younger, when I saw, you know, rioting on the news and stuff. But there is a point in time where if you feel trapped, you've tried literally every outlet to get your voice heard, and you just keep hitting a brick wall, and honestly worse, the brick wall somehow punches you in the face and kicks you down as well. There really is no other reaction. It is 100% human, and I mean, well, this is a huge point of philosophy, I guess, but anyway, that was a huge digression. What I want to say is, If he becomes the focal point of the series, this show can start doing a lot more in terms of telling something incredibly, incredibly unique and really, really even further separating itself from everything else on television. I think I read a tweet that was like, The Nick is the best experiment on television, and it 100% is. In the same way I thought Fargo was the easiest thing to watch this year, and if the Leftovers is a kind medium between that and the Nick is definitely the most out there, which I've again said multiple times in previous episodes of this podcast. So how do we want to wrap this up? Let's see. The Nick season 1 is on sale for Blu-ray. I think it's only $14.95 on Amazon Prime. Again, if you don't have Amazon Prime, you're all lying to me. If anyone tells me I don't have Amazon Prime, you are lying to me. So go buy it. Watch it with your family. It's fun. I know some of you have friends in med school. It's so fun to ask your friends in med school random questions like, hey, Megan, what is the Pouch of Douglas? And of course, this is on Facebook, so the response is, the Pouch of Douglas is the theoretical space between the uterus and the anus. Why are you asking me these questions? So there's always that fun stuff to look out for. So again, you heard my recommendations, folks. Fargo first, The Leftovers, and The Nick. You cannot go wrong. These shows are accessible on streaming websites as well as iTunes. And I know some of you also have iTunes gift card money. I have like $50 of that crap stored up from like 4 years of Christmas. So anyway, moving on, let's kind of just go on a big review of television in general this past fall. There's been a lot of fun and not always good, but still fun programming put out forward. So if I were to give you My top five. Yeah, my top five series for the year right now, or for the season right now. I would drop The Leftovers, The Nick, Fargo, and accompanied by two comedies, You're the Worst, as well as Aziz Ansari's Master of None, and a close second from Jessica Jones. But anyway, let's I apologize. I haven't talked about comedies enough on this show, and I think it's because I struggle. I would struggle talking about, you know, it episodically every week, but also because I think I tend to binge comedies more often, and I most recently just caught up on both of those series, You're the Worst and Master of None, so I apologize. And to be honest, You're the Worst straddles the dramedy line a little bit, but not as hard as Master of None. That's definitely a straight dramedy. But anyway, let's start with Master of None. We're gonna go hopefully another 5 minutes, guys, and then I'll leave you to your wonderful Christmas holidays. So Master of None was Aziz Ansari's new series, a Netflix original. It's all shot in New York, and it dropped, I believe either early November or the end of October. And that, accompanied with Jessica Jones, have been my two favorite things from Netflix this year, considering I thought they were both better than Bloodlines, which was awesome, but I mostly just like Ben Mendelsohn. And I thought the Orange is the New Black this season was really, really very mediocre there. But what's special about The Master of None is you're getting Aziz. I think what we stereotypically like about Aziz, that wonderful, just like overflowing, snappy, witty, outgoing personality. But, you know, in the same way that if we think Tom Haverford is Aziz Ansari is Tom Haverford, this is kind of him reminding us that he's not that character anymore. Or, sorry, that he's not only that character. That's what I was looking for. And that means this feels incredibly honest. Whereas Parks and Rec, you know, the greater story of all of these characters moving together is wonderful, heartwarming, and feels honest. You know, they are a bit caricature-y. And, you know, that is the type of television they're trying to make there. It's more sitcom-y, it's more not sitcom-y. It's like more mockumentary, but it is network. What Aziz did is he took, I think, bits of his personality, and more importantly, bits of what it's like being his age, just being a young person who grew up, you know, after the 90s, 80s, 90s, and is kind of trying to figure out their way through the world still right now. Now, the best description of Master of None I can give you is unfortunately a comparison to another series. It has a very, very similar yet slightly bubblier vibe as Louis. The major difference, and the reason I like it more than Louis, is completely personal and related, I think, to my age. If you are over, in my opinion, if you are between the ages of 22, excuse me, maybe not 20, 23 and 35, this show is going to resonate with you like a perfect temple bell. Like, that just, you're going to laugh, you're going to like cry, but at the end of it, your like body is just going to have this weird vibrating energy in it that's just like, you just will think about everything in your life. You're going to think about your parents, you're going to think about your relationships, you're going to think about your friends, and hopefully you're going to think about, you know, what eventually we all want from life. So if you want a heartwarming story, a great side of Aziz Ansari, and honestly not a really big time commitment, because I believe it was 8 episodes or 10 episodes on Netflix that each 29 minutes, please go check this show out. Watch it with your girlfriend or boyfriend. It's you guys will enjoy it, and you'll probably like cry together and have a like great moment later in the evening. But that's the pitch. Aziz Ansari, Master of None on Netflix. Moving on to You're the Worst. I love this show. I did a little piece on BuzzFeed, I think last year, about season one of You're the Worst. This is joining well, I guess I suppose catastrophe and casual more so join this in a new type, in my opinion, a new type of comedy. And the way I describe it is it kind of feels like the stories, it's like a movie that's like compacted, like a mini series of a movie. I'm not sure. It's because it's not at all sitcom-y. Yet it dwells in the same, what I like to call terrible people comedy, that like, I believe we get accustomed to with things like The League and, It's Always Sunny, just, you know, people doing terrible things, that are really funny. However, the twist of this is that you actually genuinely care about these characters, and you kind of are treated to this fine balance between what they can get away with and not necessarily the direct consequences of that action, meaning like they stole a car, they're now in jail kind of situation. More the really human and kind of, you know, emotional and lifestyle detriments their behavior and choices have to themselves and their relationship. Chris Gere, Aya Cash, the two leads, I'm not sure what Aya Cash has done. She's been in, after the show came out, she's guested in an episode of Modern Family. But I apologize, I love you, and I should know your background better. And I believe Chris Gere had a small stint on Downton Abbey, which I haven't watched, so there's also that. But anyway, they're joined by Heather Donahue as well as Desmond Borges, are their two supporting roles. This is a wonderful cast, and more importantly, these are amazing, amazing writers under the great direction of the showrunner, Stephen Falk. I think these, Stephen Falk, Allison Bennett, Eva Anderson, Felipe Juvian, I always butcher his name, Juvian, Shane Kosakowski, and Franklin Hardy, I think, are the primary writers for this series. Yeah, I really like the show. And their voices, I think, sing through these characters and also just kind of the world they created. And this is another perfect show, I believe, if you're over the age of 23, between the age of 23 and 35, this is going to be for you. You're going to laugh out loud a ton. And you're also going to feel a few things, but not too hard, because that, you know, then it wouldn't be, you know, easy TV. But check out You're the Worst on FXX, I believe, but also, like, you can find it on FX Now, iTunes. Unfortunately, I don't think it's up on any other... I think on Hulu... You might be able to unlock it if you're like, you know, that whole cable thing where it's like, oh, if you have cable, you can use our streaming services, but give us your cable information. So basically, like, you have to be paying for cable, which sucks. But that's useful because I don't really understand how you get FXX, like what package that comes with. But like, it's not standard, and it's kind of irritating that it was really hard for me to watch this series this year. But again... Stephen Falk's You're the Worst, starring Chris Gere and Aya Cash. Check it out, guys. You know, I guess that was mostly what I wanted to talk about in terms of big, big recommendations. But, you know, there are a lot of fun shows out there right now. And I think I'm just going to list a ton. If you're a big martial arts fan and, you know, you kind of would like to see a better representation of... not representation. You'd like to see more Asian leads on television. Into the Badlands is really, really B-movie pulpy, and it's kind of, it is a little silly at points, but the fighting's great. It's kind of like if The Walking Dead met, if Revolution met martial arts and was not on NBC. let's see. I'm still a huge fan of Shonda. I believe all of those series finished pretty early this past year. I think before December even, or maybe the first week of December. But awesomely, How to Get Away with Murder, Scandal, I don't watch Grey's Anatomy, I'm sorry, have both been really great. They're not losing any energy, and if you have the time and you like the content, just watch it. Don't feel guilty about it. Drink some wine and enjoy Kerry Washington just, you know, giving some sweet speeches and fawning over the world's wet noodle list of a president. What else is out there? Empire. Unfortunately, I'm behind on Empire, but I think it's still going strong. It's still amazingly over the top. I'm probably going to download the soundtrack for this season too. That's on Fox. And let's just wrap this up with a nice little CW bow. We were treated to, wonderful mid-season finales on the CW, with heavy anticipation for both Arrow and The Flash, heralding in the new, I don't even know if it's a flagship, the new series, the new superhero series for the spring, or the new year, called, I believe it comes out on January 13th, it's the DC Legends of Tomorrow. Ooh, and a big correction on this. When they originally made the trailer for that, I don't believe they had decided to recast or actually keep Ronnie Raymond dead. I don't know if it was based on the actor's commitment, blah, blah, blah. It could have been a variety of things, but I was mistaken. Ronnie Raymond is not coming back, and the new actor, I forget his name. I think it's Jason? Oh, I apologize. Is going to be the Firestorm represented in DC Legends of Tomorrow as well. Honestly, the funnest thing on the CW that's, I think, the most accessible right now is iZombie. So if you want a fun, cute procedural with, like, CW relationship drama and, like, fun caricatures, check out iZombie. Rose McIda is the main character, and she's a joy. And then, of course, Rain, which I will not recommend anyone to watch. If you want to watch it, check it out. It's... It's basically revisionist history that gets away with it by saying, "Lost in the lines of history, find the tale of Mary, Queen of Scots, betrayal, love, friendship, blah, blah, blah." But my only thing is, if you haven't seen The 100, it's available. Both seasons are available on Hulu and Netflix. Please watch it, because it's coming back in January, and I'm going to be talking about it all the goddamn time. So... I'm sure there's a ton of television I'm missing. It's always been a great 2 years for sitcoms. Blackish, Fresh Off the Boat are still both wonderful series. Constance Wu, I Love You, I Wish You Were My Mom or My Sister or someone related to me. My last thing would be also, if you have the opportunity to check out Transparent on Amazon Prime, Good Girls Revolt on Amazon Prime if you have not, and then as well as Casual and Catastrophe. Casual is on Hulu, it's a Hulu original, and Catastrophe is on Amazon. It's a British show that is now an Amazon original. And again, if you cannot wait for Game of Thrones, I still would recommend watching The Last Kingdom. I found out what the book series is called. It's called The Saxon Tales, and it has good elements. It's, the guy's hot, there's swords, you know, you get the picture. But it's been awesome, guys. I appreciate, as always, you guys listening, because I know I ramble, and I know I don't say a lot of really valuable things on this podcast, but I hope you enjoy listening. I enjoy having you on, having you listen as well. Hopefully, over the next couple of months, there are going to be some reformatting of this podcast. We're still going to do a few recaps. I'm still going to follow shows, but I'm hopefully going to have either a regular partner for this segment of the show. And I'm going to hopefully be able to bring a lot more people in to interview. For example, I have my fingers are crossed. My friend Sam Futerman's movie Twinsters is on Netflix right now. And I really would love to have her on the show for an interview. But anyway, thanks for listening, guys. This has been another wonderful episode of Storytime with Tofu. And I wish you all a very, very happy holidays and the best, best, best of New Year's if I don't record another podcast by then. Thanks so much, guys. Happy Star Wars. Bye-bye.